Hare Krishna. I'm grateful to be here with all of you in Govardhan Eco Village, the lotus feet of their lordships. And wherever I travel in the world, be it Australia, Canada, New Zealand, America, especially if there are places where devotees are doing Western outreach, you know, the devotees over there, one of the places which they introduce to new people is Govardhan Eco Village. And it's a world famous place. And it is, apart from the many remarkable reward that has won over here, along with that, it's a way in which the spirituality that is so deeply intrinsic to India, without the associated many problems that are there in the Thams. So that example is what is being demonstrated here. And I'm grateful to be here, and I'll try to assist all of you in your glorious service to their lordships. So today, in the next 3 days, and on Wednesday evening, I'll be taking a 4-part seminar on the mind, which will be based on this section of the Bhagavatam, which is the Avanti Brahmana. So I'll basically talk about the nature of the mind in today's class, and then in the future class I'll talk about the different forces or factors that make the mind agitated and how to deal with them. I will use a lot of metaphors for this purpose, some metaphors drawn from nature and some drawn from technology to explain this. So today's talk I'll focus on the theme of understanding the nature of the mind. So this was by the Avanti Brahmana, is saying that all the religious activities that we do, danam swadharmo niyamo yamascha, whatever are the various varieties of activities that we may do, which are considered pious, their purpose is not just to get pious credits. Their purpose is not just to get good things in life. Their purpose is sarve mano nigraha lakshanantaha. Their purpose is to get mano nigraha, to get control in the mind. And just the controlled mind itself is also not the goal. The controlled mind is to be focused. Parohi manasa, parohi yogo manasa samadhi. And we want to fix the mind on spiritual reality. Samadhi, in spiritual absorption, in trance. So that means whatever religious activities that we do, their purpose is to control the mind. And the purpose of everything, including the purpose of life itself, is to fix the focused mind, the controlled mind, on the supreme spiritual reality. The mind is a word which has many different meanings in different contexts. And everybody uses the word mind, but often the way we use the word mind is different from the way it is used in the outside world. Say for example, when we may use the word mind to, if we are talking with someone, if a teacher is giving a class and the student is distracted, teacher, where is your mind? Here, where is your mind means, where is your attention? Give this your full mind. That means, give your attention to this. So the word mind can refer to attention. The word mind can also refer to intelligence. Have you lost your mind? Are you out of your mind? That means, have you lost your intelligence? Why are you acting so foolishly? Why are you speaking so foolishly? So the word mind can also refer to intelligence. The word mind can also refer to the intellectual capacity of a person. So it may be said, Einstein was the greatest scientific mind of the last century. So, or what great minds have spoken about the Bhagavad Gita. You know, I was in America, somebody would have prepared a brochure to be distributed with the Gita. So, Emerson, Thoreau, and others, what they have said about the Gita. So, what great minds have said about the Gita. Now, there when we use the word mind, it refers to the intellectual capacity of a person. So, he's a great mind. That means he's a very great intelligence. So it's not just intelligence as a faculty, but the person who is a very intelligent person that can refer to the mind. In Western philosophical context, the word mind has a particular meaning. There they use the word mind to contrast it with matter. So, mind-matter duality. There was one of the prominent Western philosophers, René Descartes, and he talked about mind-matter duality. So, matter is what they used to refer to physical reality, to the world we see around us. And mind is a non-material reality. So, in that sense, if we consider these four different meanings of the word mind, when we, in our philosophy, use the word mind, it has a significantly different meaning. So, in the last sense, in the philosophical sense, mind refers to the non-material. Whereas in our philosophy, mind is non-material, is not non-material. It is material, but it is subtle material. So, if we consider our present existence to be three-dimensional, that there is gross body, subtle body, and soul. Or we could say, matter, mind, and consciousness. So then, in this understanding, the mind is the interface between the soul and the body. The mind is the medium by which the soul's consciousness is rooted into the body and to the outer world through the body. The mind acts like a interface. In 15.8 in the Bhagavad Gita, it said that Shotram Chakshu Sparshanam Cha Rasanam Ghranam Eva Cha Adhishtaya Manaschayam Vishayan Upasevate. Right? The soul in the material world, Vishayan Upasevate, tries to enjoy the sense objects by using the mind as the interface. So the five senses are centered around the mind. The five knowledge acquiring senses are what Krishna refers to over here: Shotram Chakshu Sparshanam Cha. The eyes, the ears, the skin, the nose, and the tongue, through which we taste. So I was at a devotee jeweler in America, in Florida. So I was at a shop. So it's now jewels are very expensive. So he had different gates, different doors, and where he is sitting, there's a central monitor. And at the central monitor, he could see. It is a big monitor, and what was happening at all the doors, he could see. So there were, in his house, he had, in that particular house, he had four doors. So from the four doors, who is coming in, what is happening, the thieves are coming in, you can see. So we can envision the mind to be like a big monitor, in which there are five screens. And those five screens are the five senses. So the soul is the observer. And the soul is observing the mind. So the inputs from the various senses come onto the screen. And the screen is, like now if you have some computers which are more advanced, you may have split screen. You can have two windows in the screen. And if you press on a particular window, then that window zooms and it occupies the full screen. So imagine a monitor in which there are five windows in it. So you can see at five places what is happening, and then whichever we click, that zooms. So for example, right now we are all sitting and we are trying to understand the Bhagavatam. So you are hearing and you are seeing. Now if suddenly a screen comes in the background, then although we are not seeing anything, that screen, what the input that is coming in through the ears, that catches attention. And suddenly, we become aware of that. So, other things, we become unaware. Or say, suddenly a gust of cold wind starts blowing. Then normally, we are not so much aware of what is happening at the physical level of touch. But when we start feeling uncomfortable because of the cold, then that input is coming in. And immediately, in the window of the mind, okay, whatever the input coming in from the touch, that, because it becomes uncomfortable, it becomes prominent, it zooms up. And then we start thinking about that. Oh, you know, should I try to find another blanket, or should I just walk out of here, or what can I do? Maybe I can just pull myself closer. So what can I do to avoid the cold? So basically, the mind has these. Mind is like an integrator, is a displayer, and the integrator of the perceptions coming from the body. coming from the senses. Now, of course, it doesn't have only these five windows. We could say there is one more window over there, the sixth window, which is the mind can conjure or perceive even without any sensory perception. That means sometimes an image can come up from a past recollection. So we may not have seen something right now. There is no see the, what comes in the mind has two sources. Either it is external perception or internal recollection. So we could say the external perception are the five senses from which the external perception comes in. And the sixth window, which is there on it, is the internal recollection. So now this is a simple analysis because it's not just five windows. See, any kind of metaphor that we use for explaining anything spiritual, the metaphors are like rubber bands. So if I want to carry something, I want to fold something, I put a rubber band around it. The rubber band helps me to get a grip on it. It covers it and folds it. But the rubber band is not the object. And so similarly, no metaphor adequately describes the object which it is compared with. Or not adequately, exhaustively, completely describes it. For a particular purpose, it can serve its purpose. But when I said there are five windows, but then I gave an example. Say, I am speaking right now and you hear a scream from the background. Here what has happened? In the sound window itself, two inputs are coming in. The input of my speech and the input of the scream from behind. So in a sense, we could say that there are five sensory gateways and one mental gateway, which all come in the mind. But within these gateways also, there can be different, we can say, lanes. Along which, so like if you have a big expressway, there's one road, but along that there are many lanes. So like that, our consciousness can go in many different directions. But the mind is the channel through which the consciousness goes. So, now with this understanding, let's go back and look at the different meanings of the word mind, which I said earlier. So the mind can refer to, give it your attention. So now, on these channels, or on these windows, whatever is being displayed, the soul is the observer. The soul is observing. But whatever zooms up on the window of the mind, that is what we focus on. So in that sense, we say, give it your full mind. Where is your mind? What does that mean? That means what is being displayed on the mind. What is the soul focusing its consciousness on? And sometimes people daydream. When they're daydreaming, what is happening? They're actually sitting at one place, but they're perceiving something which may not have any relation with their physical reality. So at that time, their mind is displaying something and they are thinking about it. The soul is there, the mind is there, the world is there. So the mind is meant to connect the soul with the world. But sometimes, the mind doesn't connect the soul with the world. Rather, the mind simply connects to the soul and goes into some mental world, into some mental reality. We can call it reality or not, that we'll discuss later. But it is a mental perception which is somewhere else. Now when we say give it your full mind, that means there is a particular object in the external world. Say a teacher is giving a class and focus on it. That means rather than on the mental screen other things being displayed, what you should focus on is focus on this particular object where we are meant to your attention. Or have you lost your mind? This means, here we say the word, mind as intelligence. So now here what happens is, it is only when there is a right focus. Say, if I am driving a car, and while driving a car, I am meant to look ahead. But if I start talking with someone, and I start looking at that person, hey, where are you going? So if we are not perceiving properly, we will not be able to act properly. And intelligence, in one sense, is simply the faculty of three things. Appropriate perception, appropriate processing, and appropriate responding. So, we perceive, we process, and if you want to use a rhyming word, we pursue. Pursue is P-U-R-S-U-E. We chase that, we seek that. So, we perceive, process, and pursue. So the capacity to do this properly That is intelligence. Just like the charioteer in the chariot body metaphor, the charioteer is meant to control the horses. Now what does that involve? It involves first perceive the road properly. Okay, what is there? And then you see which horse is pulling more and which direction they are pulling, then process. Oh, this horse is pulling more, so I have to pull back more in this direction, so that it doesn't go in that direction. And then perceive, okay, that is the destination you want to go. So now from here I have to turn right. Now here we should go straight. Here the road is a little rocky, so let me move on this side. So basically, intelligence is the capacity to properly perceive, process, and then pursue. So for this, again, this interface is very important. First of all, the inputs from the outer world have to come on the screen, and then the person has to process. And when we process, then after that, the signals are given to the working senses. And the working senses execute whatever is desired. So sometimes in our philosophy also, the words mind, intelligence are used interchangeably. Sometimes there is intelligence is your enemy also. You have to be very careful, intelligence can get corrupted. Sometimes it is said that the mind can be the friend. So basically, we can use the word mind, even in our philosophy, in two contexts. It can refer to one particular element of the subtle body. Subtle body is mind, intelligence and ego. And one particular element is the mind. Or alternatively, the mind can refer to the entire subtle body. So when we say matter, mind and consciousness, then here the word mind refers not just to the subtle body, to a particular element of the subtle body. It refers to the soul subtle body. Just like if we consider the word Vaikuntha. Generically, the word Vaikuntha refers to the spiritual world. So, this world is a place of Kuntha, anxiety. The other world is a place free from anxiety. So, it's Vaikuntha. Now, specifically also, we can contrast Vaikuntha from Goloka. And Krishna resides not in Vaikuntha, but in Goloka. So, in this case, when we say Vaikuntha planets, we are referring to the non-Goloka planets in Vaikuntha Loka. So the word Vaikuntha can generically refer to the spiritual world, and Vaikuntha can also refer to specific planets within the spiritual world. So like that, the word mind can refer generically to the subtle body, and it can refer specifically to one particular element within the subtle body. So when I'm talking about the interface, say, from the outer world, the perceptions are coming on the screen, which has six divisions, five from the external perceptions and the six which is the recollection. The soul is processing this. So the word mind can refer to it can refer to attention, it can refer to intelligence, it can refer to intellectual capacity. Now different people, they have different kinds of screens. Now, that means that rather different inputs come more precisely. Some people are very good at processing sound. Say somebody is a car mechanic. Just by hearing what kind of sound the car is giving, that person can say, hey, this car has this problem. This car is functioning very nicely. There are experts. The one devotee I met, he is into the lumber industry. And he told me that when wood burns, just by hearing the sound of the wood burning, he can understand which wood it is and how old it is. I wonder, can you even hear the sound of wood burning? For us, it's just wood burning, everything. Is it making me warm enough or not? But, so, depending on different people's specializations, their talents, their training, they are very acute about certain perceptions. So, when this happens, that means that is their talent. So some people may be very good at subtle shades of music. You know, this music is proper, this is not proper. Some people may be very sharp at fragrances. This fragrance is very attractive. Some of us, we can just notice fragrances. But some people can actually differentiate this fragrance, this fragrance, this fragrance. Some people are very sharp with respect to colors. You know, we may just know Vibgai or seven colors. But actually, I gave a talk in America at an institute. It's interesting. The name of that institute was the American Institute of Illusion. So that was actually a place where they train people to do movies. So they have an idea, they're creating illusion. So it's the American Institute of Illusion. So there they're telling me that in the movie industry they have 700 colors. Now 700 are each of the 7 colors which we have, 100 shades of them. And then you can go further also in them. So they show me a list of memorizing the 700 names itself will take a lifetime. It's easier to memorize 700 verses of the Gita. But, so there are people who can just see a color and they can name it. Oh, this is this color, this shade, this particular thing. So now here, how is somebody very expert at something and other person is just not at all good at it? It's not that the soul has or lacks musical capacity or visual capacity or audio capacity. The soul is pure. Soul is a part of Krishna. And the color outside also is the same. But it is the interface. It is the subtle body which is where primarily the abilities or inabilities are stored. Even when somebody sings very nicely. Now, if you see, in singing, there is a singing capacity in terms of the throat's capacity to sing for a long time. But there is also the sweetness of singing. Now, if we take at a physical level, if we compare the throat muscles and the organs, the components of the throat of a celebrated singer and of an ordinary singer, we won't find any significant structural differences. Maybe that person, because of practicing and singing, has greater muscular capacity within that to sing longer. But why is it that from this person's mouth such a sweet sound comes, and from other person's mouth that sound and a sweet sound doesn't come? If you just look at the muscular content, it's not that their muscular content or physical content is any different. So that our talents, they definitely have a physical component to it. But it's not just physical component. In cricket, some batsmen, they hit shots very powerfully. Now, yes, if a batsman has a hefty build, that person wants to hit sixes, he can hit very easily. But that doesn't mean any person with a hefty build can hit sixes. Isn't it? Along with power, you need a good eye, you need good timing, good body coordination, good speed, all of it is required. So, the physical component of our talents is important. But the talent is not just at a physical level. It's also at the level of the mind. So, again, when I'm talking about the mind, I'm referring to the subtle interface between the two. So, the last meaning of the word mind, which I talked from the Western philosophical context, was of the non-material component, non-physical component rather. Now, for most people, to perceive that there is something beyond the body, that itself is difficult. And they do that and they can't do much beyond that. One devotee in Russia was telling me, he was giving a class, and in a class he said, "You are not your body." So after that class, one person asked the question, "Sir, if I am not my body, then whose body am I?" So the idea is, I am my body. So if I am not my body, then I must be somebody else's body. So it's quite difficult for people to understand that I am not the body itself. So if there is something beyond the body, now how do we differentiate that there are many things beyond the body also? That there is a mind and there is a soul. So of course, through some intellectual analysis of how the body is changing, but we the person remain unchanging, by that we can understand I am different from the body. We have a reasonable amount of reasonings for recognizing I am not the body. But how do we understand that I am not the mind? So at one level there is analysis. The Bhagavad Gita offers us a model of the self, which is a 3-level model. Body, mind and soul. Now how do we empirically or experientially realize this model? There are different ways. One way is that, most often I do this, if I do some mindfulness classes, I do this exercise. So, we can try this just to analyze. So, all of you can close your eyes now. please don't go to sleep. So, after closing your eyes, take 3 deep breaths. Now, on your inner screen, all of you will be seeing something. Maybe you are seeing the deities, maybe you are seeing your room, maybe you are seeing Prasad, maybe you are seeing a friend. Whatever it is that you are seeing on your mental screen, now try to take a step back and try to look at who is seeing that on the screen. You are seeing something on your screen, and what you are seeing will keep changing. But try to take a step back and see who is looking at that screen. No matter how many times you try to step back, the observer keeps stepping back. So we can see the inner screen, but we can never see the seer of the inner screen. Open your eyes now. So, what we are looking for is what we are looking with. What we are looking for, we are looking for the inner seer. But we are looking with that inner seer. So the inner screen on which we see different things, that inner screen can be likened to the mind. But the seer of the inner screen is the soul. Now on this, now when we close our eye, when our eyes are open, we don't really think that there's an inner screen within us. Because whatever is in the outer world, that simply gets displayed on the inner screen. And we just see the outer world, we don't see the screen. But when we close our eyes, and then we try to look, we're not looking, now external perception is coming in. But still, some image is forming on the mind. Some image is forming somewhere inside. And it's not one image, it keeps changing also. But when this happens, where is this happening? That inner screen on which it happens, that is the mind. So, there is an outer world, there is an inner picture of that world, and there is an inner perceiver of that world. So the outer world is the physical reality. The inner screen or the inner picture of that outer world, we could say the inner screen on which the picture of the outer world is formed, that is the mind. And beyond that is the soul. So, nowadays, scientists try to reduce, not scientists in general, but many reductionistic scientists, many materialistic scientists, they try to reduce the whole experience of consciousness to brain phenomena. And they say everything is happening at the level of the brain. So our consciousness comes from the brain. Our experiences are experienced by the brain. There are many problems with this hypothesis. And I'm not going to go into that in detail. But just one related point to understand how there is something beyond the physical. And beyond the physical, there is not just one. There are multiple things. There is a screen and there is a seer. So, one of the biggest unsolved problems in neurology or neuroscience is what is called as the binding problem or the integration problem. So, right now, if a parrot flies by over here. Now, if the parrot flies by, now, and the parrot is chirping. So, there are 4 perceptions that we get. There is the shape, there is the color, there is the motion, and there is the sound. Now, scientists have found that different areas of the brain are connected with different perceptions. So the areas that process shape, motion, form, and sound are all different. So the shape input goes into, say, one part of the brain, the motion input goes into another part of the brain, the color input goes into another form of the brain, the sound input goes into another part of the brain. And yet, when we perceive it, we don't perceive it as distinct. we get one integrated picture. Now, there is no one part of the brain which is connected to all other parts of the brain. There is no one area of the brain which acts as the integrator of the perceptions from all other areas of the brain in terms of functioning. So, where this integration happens, that is a mystery. Now, why is the integration important? Sometimes there are homemade videos that are done. Say two people are fighting, and it's a homemade video of a mock fight or something. Now, there is the audio input. If I want to do good quality, we have the camera which simply takes the video, and then we record the audio separately, and then we integrate the audio in the video. So, if the audio and video are not integrated properly, then the fight is going on, and before the punch, boom, the sound of the punch comes. The punch and the audio will hit, this person is calling out. So, what has happened? The audio and the video are not synced together. So this syncing is very important. And for us, we get an integrated image. So, where does this integration happen? That integration does not happen in the brain. It happens in the mind. So the mind is the integrator of the phenomena of the inputs that are coming in from the senses to the brain. The brain is very important, but the brain alone is not the integrator. To give a tech metaphor, we have the hardware, the software, and the user. So the hardware is the body, the software is the mind, and the user is the soul. Now, we may have some high-tech security device which takes in inputs from various places. And when it takes in inputs from various, say like the security camera or the security computer which is there, which takes in inputs, so we could have some physical wires or some radar technology, whatever it is, by which the inputs are coming in. But simply the inputs coming into the security computer are not enough. There has to be a software which processes and brings those inputs together. Then only it is through the processing of the software that say we'll have six windows on the monitor where we'll see different things. So the integrator is the mind. But the integrator is not the perceiver. The integrator is important, but the perceiver, the seer is different. I recently wrote a book on demystifying reincarnation, where I talked about past life memories primarily, but one major section is about how consciousness cannot be experienced, explained in material terms. In that book, I elaborately explained this point. Science magazine, on its 125th anniversary, it made a list of 125 questions for which science doesn't have answers. So the second question, second most important question, for which science doesn't have an answer to is, where does consciousness come from? The first question, of course, is where did the universe come from? So, where does the consciousness come from? It's a consciousness is a universal phenomena which we all experience. In fact, it is through consciousness that we experience everything. But consciousness itself is not comprehensible by science. Why? Because science is looking only at the material level. If science expands to accommodate the non-material, then consciousness can be better understood. So, I'm not going to go too much into science over here. But the point which I'm making is that at the non-physical level, there are layers. So, the mind is the layer where integration happens. And then the soul is the layer where actual experience happens. So now, if I consider this model also, when we say that the mind is like the monitor, and I am the observer. So here the mind, in all these examples, it appears to be non-living. It appears to be insentient. But in our tradition, the mind is often personified. The mind is your enemy. Be very careful about it. When we call somebody as an enemy or as a friend, that means we are personifying it. We are treating it as a person. So, the mind appears to be living. It's saying, hey, this is so boring. I'm not interested. This is too intellectually demanding. When will this class get over? It's enough now. So the mind is saying like this. So what is happening? The mind is speaking. We all can feel that the mind is saying something. It's too cold right now. Whatever it is. So then if the mind is simply non-living, then how does it speak? So the mind is non-living, but it is not not like dull or gross matter. Gross matter and subtle matter are different in their potentialities. See, just like the hardware and the software are different in their potentialities. A computer will simply sit at a particular place. When I power it on, it will turn on. But a software, on the other hand, will have its own default settings. So for example, if I want to visit a particular website. Now, if I want to visit isconnews.com, I type I. Now I want to type isconnews. But if I am working on a computer which belongs to someone else, and there that person, or say, without confusing too much, if I have visited prior to this indiatimes.com many times, then what will happen? The browser's autocomplete feature, as soon as I type I, it will give indiatimes.com. Now, I had no intention of going to India Times. My intention was to go to ISKCON News. But as soon as I type I, because of the past choices, that is stored over there, and that pops up automatically. So this is the nature of the software. So software gives propositions. Okay, read this. So as soon as I type I, it will give autocomplete. So that's a proposition coming from there. So for example, if I'm hungry. Now, hunger is an authentic bodily need. But when I am hungry, what do I desire to eat? That will depend on what I have regularly eaten or what I like to eat. So, when a person is hungry, a Punjabi, in his mind, autocomplete will be paratha. For a South Indian, it may be dosa. So, depending, for an American, it might be pizza or hot dog or pasta, whatever. So, what happens is, I may go to visit a particular website, but what comes up in the complete will depend on, will be different for different people based on what they have completed. So the mind gives its propositions based on what we have done in the past, which propositions we have chosen, which we have browsed. Based on that, those come again and again. So in Google, if you search and I search, and your computer with your login and I search with my login, the results of the search will be significantly different. Why? Because basically Google doesn't just give a neutral results. It gives customized results. And so the same object, say suppose if I don't like gulab jamun so much, but suppose you like gulab jamun very much, then as soon as, oh, today there is gulab jamun, immediately the desire will start growing more and more and more and more. So, if we have contemplated it more, then what happens? It comes more prominently in the consciousness and it rises more and more. So, our mind is a very responsive software. Now, if you are searching for flight tickets, actually, Google is not just responsive, it is quite exploitative also. So, what happens? Actually, if I am searching for a flight ticket, and if I have searched once for a flight ticket, and I search for a second time, if I visit the same website, the price for that ticket will come more. Because if I search twice, thrice, if I want to go from here to Singapore, and I search Mumbai to Singapore, now if I search once, a particular price will come. If I search for a second time, then even in the same flight, the price will come more. And if, say, instead of browsing in the public, if you go in the private mode, and then you browse, then the price will come less. So why? Because what happens is, what Google sees is, hey, if you are searching through three times for a Mumbai to Singapore flight, that means you have to go there. And if you really have to go there, then whatever is the price you will spend. So what happens is the prices get hiked up. And this is considered to be like a unfair practice. There is a whole issue about net neutrality. That's of course a big subject. But the point which I am making over here is that the interface between us and the information that we are searching for. I am searching for a flight to Singapore. But the interface between me is not simply a neutral interface. The interface shapes what I perceive. So similarly, based on our desires, based on our conditionings, based on the way we have experienced in the past, the interface of the mind perceives differently. So sometimes there is the same person, you know, it's like I may be very angry with some person. I feel this person is so unreasonable, so irritable, so ununderstanding, and so harsh. And somebody else may say, this person is so kind, so helpful, so loving. Are you talking about the same person? What has happened is, because that person is the same person. But the way we have experienced, and not just the way we have experienced, the way the experiences are stored in the mind, we perceive that person differently. And somebody else perceives that person differently. So this is not just with respect to objects, it's also with respect to persons. So the mind is a via media for us to perceive the world. And each of us has a distinct mind. I'll conclude with one point, and then we will discuss more about it in tomorrow's class, that the mind is indispensable for us. The mind, although the mind troubles us, but we need the mind. Because the mind is the means by which we perceive the world. So if there is no integrating, if there is no software, then whatever information is coming in, it just can't be perceived. So the soul is the root of consciousness. R-O-O-T, root. The soul is from where the consciousness is coming. The mind is the root of consciousness. R-O-U-T. The soul is the root of consciousness. Root in the sense of origin. The mind is the root, the pathway for consciousness. So for the consciousness to go, the mind is the essential pathway. And the mind takes in the inputs. So the mind is the channel through which external perceptions come in to the soul. And then the mind is the channel through which the intentions of the soul come out and they act on the world. So we need the mind. We can't live by resenting or rejecting the mind. We have to use the mind. So when we say neglect the mind, that is not neglect the mind entirely. It is neglect specific propositions within the mind. I'll talk about neglect as a strategy for dealing with the mind in later class. But in this class, our focus was on understanding what the mind is. And importantly, the mind is essential for us. So we cannot do away with the mind. The mind is indispensable and the mind is irreplaceable. Indispensable means we need it. And irreplaceable means we can't replace it. Say if I have a car and one tire gets punctured. So now the tire is indispensable. The car can't function without the tire. But if one particular tire is damaged, I can get another tire and replace it. But the mind is not replaceable. Our mind is the only mind we have. We can't get another mind. So if my hand gets damaged, I can maybe get a prosthetic limb. If my kidney gets damaged, I can get a dialysis unit. So we can replace. So but the mind is neither dispensable nor replaceable. We can't do without the mind, and we can't get another mind to do it. So that's why it's vital for us that we have to train our mind. Our mind is the only mind we have. And it is the mind with which we will have to work in our life. So by understanding this, we can take up the treatment practice for treating it. It has some bad tendencies within it, and those bad tendencies can be very harmful. But if software gets damaged, we may have to remove the corrupt elements within it. But we cannot get rid of the software. We need the software. Only with that software can we work. So the mind is indispensable and irreplaceable. And the way to train the mind is, I'll talk about the four strategies which are used for interacting with people. Sam, Dam, Bhed and Danda. So we will, in our future three classes, we'll talk about these four strategies. So we personify the mind, learn to treat the mind as another person, and then learn to see how to deal with that mind. So I'll summarize what I spoke today. So I spoke about understanding the nature of the mind, that all these practices are meant to control the mind, and the purpose of the controlled mind is to focus on the Supreme Reality, Krishna. While talking about the mind, I explained that the mind has many, the word mind has different meanings. So we discussed four meanings from the contemporary intellectual context. We discussed the Bhagavatam's, the Gita context of the meaning of the word mind, and we correlated between the two. So mind can refer to attention, it can refer to intelligence, it can refer to the intellectual faculty of a, or intellectual or intellectual faculty of a person, and it can refer to the non-physical element of a person, of our being. The Bhagavad Gita has a specific meaning of the word mind, that it is the subtle interface between the physical body and the soul. And the word mind, even in our context, it can refer either to a specific element within the subtle body, or it can refer to the whole subtle body. Just like Vaikuntha can refer to the whole spiritual world, or it can refer to particular planets within the spiritual world. So the mind is the integrator of the perceptions coming from the outer world. Just like if we have a security monitor which has, say, the inputs from five different cameras at the five gates coming into one integrated display. So the five gates are like the five senses. And the integrated display that comes in, that display is the mind. Mind is, of course, not just the display. It is also the process by which it is displayed. In the mind, the perceptions can come from the senses through external perception, and it can also come through recollection. So we can say there are six windows over there. And whichever particular perception seems important or attractive or prominent in some other way, our attention zooms on that, and then that zooms on the screen and occupies it. What our particular mind will be attuned to, what it will expertly hear, that will depend on our particular interests, talents, training. Talent is not just a physical ability. Even if it is a physical talent like, say, singing or hitting with a bat, whatever, there is a significant mental component to it. So the mind, it acts as the displayer and the integrator. So intelligence is basically, so we talked about how whatever is displayed on the mind, that is what we give our attention to. So in that sense, the mind can be equated with attention. Where is your mind means where is your attention. Then also, intelligence is the capacity to properly perceive, process and pursue. And this all depends on the how the subtle interface is working properly or not. So in that sense, the mind can refer to the intelligence also. The mind can also refer to the overall intellectual capacity, as I said. The talent is stored in the subtle body only. And the non-physical element is something which is very difficult for people to, first of all, perceive, what to speak of differentiate. So, but we can differentiate by understanding that there is an outer world, there is an inner screen on which the outer world is displayed, and there is an inner seer. So the inner screen is the mind, and the inner seer is the soul. So now the brain is not the source of consciousness, because in the brain perceptions come in, but the brain can't integrate them. The integration happens in the mind. So we can't perceive the perceiver of the inner screen. What we are looking for is what we are looking with. Now, the mind is indispensable and irreplaceable. We can't do without the mind, because for the soul, which is the root of consciousness, the mind is the channel or the root of consciousness. And for the soul to act in the world, there has to be a root for taking in and for taking in information and sending out intention. So the mind is essential, and it is essential, and our mind is the only mind we have. It's not like a tire of a car which you can replace. Rather, what we need to do is train our mind, and to the extent we train our mind properly, to that extent we can function effectively. So are there any questions or comments? Yes, my lord.
Thank you so much, Prabhu. You have already excited everybody in the audience with your brilliant presentation. Looking forward to the next 3 days. Prabhu, these different aspects of the mind, especially in terms of the functionalities of the mind that we discussed. So it seems like the way AI is kicking off today and a lot of research going on in AI, it seems practically all of these roles can be mimicked through machine learning. And even to the point of what we call as samskaras or stored memories, at least for one lifetime or the period of it for which the machine is being trained, can also be replicated, and the response systems can be predicted. Like how you said, Google actually knows what I want even before what I want. It actually shows those relevant ads. And so a lot of interesting research is happening there. So I was trying to analyze the only defining factor, if any, between mind and that soul, as what you said, as a root of consciousness and the channel of consciousness. So, most of the modern world, we are trying to only... Nobody's worried about the subtle spiritual realities. So, practically everything else that we are dealing with in the real world can be replicated through machine intelligence. So, will there be a point where you will probably see... Now, Sophie is already around, and, you know... So will we ever see this... So what will be that one defining factor that differentiates us from machines?
Okay. So AI is advancing, and many of the information processing capacities are being replicated in machines. So what will differentiate humans from machines? Yeah. It is primarily the experiential aspect. Experience. There is what brain researchers and philosophers call as the hard problem of consciousness, and the, you could say, the conversing soft problem of consciousness. The soft problem of consciousness is how information is processed. So that is being understood more and more. Okay, which area of the brain pursues what? Which area of the brain pursues what is done there? So the correlation between neural events and emotional experiences, the correlation, that is something which is being mapped more and more exhaustively, and that can advance enormously further. So just as there is neural processing of information in the human brain, there is a digital processing of information in the computer. So one of the models, one of the analogies or metaphors used for understanding the brain is also a computer. Just as the digital circuitry is insentient, it's just 01 01 01 digital logic, but through it information is processed. So like that, neural circuitry also processes information. So the soft problem of consciousness is correlation. The hard problem of consciousness is experience. Who is it that experiences? Rather than asking the question, can machines become conscious? We can turn the question around. If machines can do everything that we humans can do without consciousness, why have we been given consciousness? See, that means, say, now there are America for countering terrorists, they have drones. Their machines, their planes, are not, there are no human beings within them. They're also using now robots to, if there are places where explosives are put, and you have to detonate the, we have to diffuse the explosive before it detonates. Then they have programmed robots. In high crime areas, instead of sending police, they send these robots. So, we will be able to do this. And if specific processing is concerned, the robots can do that. Okay, you know, we have to remove this plug, remove this, and you can that way defuse the bomb. So that kind of thing can be done. But the robo will not experience any fear. The robo will not experience any joy. The robo will not experience any horror. Emotions and the experience of emotions, that is something which is of an entirely different category. Why is it of a different category? Because there is nothing in the biochemical composition of the brain that has anything that experiences. See, there is correlation and there is causation. The two are different things. So, the major confusion in neuroscience comes because correlation and causation are confused. So, I'll give an example. What is the difference, say? Cleaner cars last longer. So this is a finding which people have made. You know, people who have whose cars are unclean. The unclean cars, they last for 5 years. Clean cars last for 7 years. So now cleaner cars last longer. Now, does this is a correlation. Okay, this car was cleaner and its lifetime was longer. This car was unclean, this car lifetime was shorter. Now, one possibility could be that cleanliness itself is the cause of the longevity of the car. But that is not necessary. We have to look at the internal functioning to prove that. It could also be that people who clean their cars regularly, they also are better in maintaining the overall car. They do its repair regularly. They do its management regularly. They drive in a proper way. So, when A is there, B is there. Wherever A occurs, B occurs. That does not necessarily mean A causes B. Correlation is not causation. So all that we can, no matter how much AI advances, the advancement of artificial intelligence will lead to greater and greater capacity for processing information. In some ways, the capacity to process information may even exceed human capacity. So for example, chess playing computers, they have been known to defeat even chess champions. But that does not mean that the chess playing computers experience anything. So there is the information processing capacity and there is the information experiencing capacity. So experience requires something entirely different. That is consciousness. So the brain is a unit for processing information in terms of receiving the phenomena, and then the mind is where the integration happens. The soul is where the soul is the one who experiences. So what is done in the brain, in some ways it's already being done more by computers. Now, for example, if I want to memorize words, I can memorize say 1,000 words, 10,000 words, 50,000 words. But a computer can contain a dictionary with hundreds of thousands of words. Now, even the mind aspect, that integration may also be done by machines. And maybe in future research of the brain, we may find out further information about the brain also. But the experiential aspect is something which just cannot be done. So, the experience of pleasure, pain, excitement, frustration, agony, none of these can be had. So we will just have a machine capable of processing information in a very impressive way, but there will be no emotion. And emotions, they can be distractions, but emotions are what make life fulfilling. So there can be functionality but without any experience. So the capacity to experience, and that is the irreducible difference between humans and machines. Yes.
Thank you, Prabhu. You explained the entire concept with so many beautiful metaphors. So, since you're explaining nature, so I'll ask, like, read that our mind, and they all have presiding deities. So, how do we understand, and like, how different objects have, like, moon has an effect on mind, and how people can hypnotize, like, and so, if you can shed some light on that.
Okay. So, if there are the presiding deities of different organs and people hypnotize, how does this happen? Yeah. There is, with respect to the presiding deities, see, science has a particular way of approaching the world. That is, it looks for natural explanations for natural phenomena. This is called as methodological naturalism. So, when Newton saw the fruit falling, Newton himself believed in God. And when he found the theory of gravity also, he ultimately said these laws point to an intelligent lawmaker. But when he saw the fruit falling, he was not looking for the explanation. Oh, God made the fruit. So, he was looking for some material mechanism which explains the falling of the fruits. So, science looks for material mechanisms. Now, where these material mechanisms came from, that is not the question which science asks. So with respect to the presiding deities which control particular phenomena within nature, we just understand that there are different models for understanding things. There is, with respect to consciousness also, there is a top-down model and a bottom-up model. So if I saw a car moving, now, the car was in the garage and now it's moving. Now, what caused it to move? You could say, okay, the car moved because its wheel started moving. Okay, but why did the wheel start moving? Oh, because there was an axle connected with it and there was the engine over there. The engine started, the fuel started getting processed in the ignition and it exerted pressure. But why did that engine get ignited? Oh, because the ignition spark was there. But why was the ignition spark lit? Go back. Oh, this key was in the vertical position, it moved to the horizontal position. So why did the car move? Because the key moved from the vertical position to the horizontal position. It's the current explanation. But is it the complete explanation? Alternatively, I could say that the owner wanted to go for a ride. That's why the car started moving. That is also perfectly true. So, the owner's intention and the car's mechanism are not two contradictory things. They are complementary. So, the scientific model of reality looks only for the material mechanisms. Whereas the Vedic model offers us a non-material picture also. So in that non-material picture, there is a supreme consciousness and there are other conscious beings also who are involved. And they all work together to monitor. So, with respect to the presiding deities of particular organs, what basically it means is that we, based on our particular karma, have particular capacities allotted to us in this lifetime. So, some people can speak well, some people can sing well, some people have kinesthetic intelligence, they can moon very gracefully, dance very beautifully, whatever. So these are organs based on which by our past karma we have been given certain faculties or we have not been given certain faculties. So that monitoring of that is done by particular devatas. So the devatas are not the cause, they are the channel. Our own karma is the cause, but they are the channel. It's like if we look at the weather. In the weather, the daily weather, we say, okay, at morning 5 o'clock, here in GE, the temperature is going to be 14 degrees Celsius. At noon 12 o'clock, it is going to be 35 degrees Celsius. So now, we may again see, I give the example, correlation. So it is not that 4 o'clock in the morning is causing the temperature of 14 degrees Celsius, or 12 o'clock in the afternoon is causing the temperature of 35 degrees Celsius. The timings are there, but there are other factors which occur at that particular time and they lead to a particular temperature. So the time is not the cause of the temperature. There are atmospheric changes which are happening. Because at a particular time, particular change happens. So just as the time does not cause the temperature, similarly, the predominating deities, they do not cause the motions of the mind. Rather, the inclinations and the motions of the mind, they are happening because of our own past karma. But at particular times, particular changes are likely. Just like in the early morning, temperature is likely to be cold. So similarly, at particular times, particular mental motions are also possible. So that's how there is a correlation, but that correlation does not mean that there is some other being who is making us dance according to their tunes. Rather, it is the tunes which we ourselves have set in the past. Now, which tunes come upon us when? That is determined by our own past karma as mediated by that particular predominating deity. Now, as far as hypnosis is concerned, how does that happen? Hypnosis basically means that we have, in modern psychology, they talk of the conscious mind and the subconscious mind. We could say that we could basically refer to it as the intelligence or conscious awareness. Let's not conflate the two models. But basically, normally I control my mind. Or rather, I act according to my intentions. Say right now, you're sitting here, you're hearing the answer. After the class gets over, you will get up and you will go for prasadam or whatever, wherever. So now, we have a conscious aspect of our mind which chooses and then acts. During hypnosis, this decision-making aspect of the mind, that is silenced. And then the other person starts making decisions for us. So what happens is, normally we evaluate. Somebody tells, now go to sleep. Do I want to sleep or do I not want to sleep? But during hypnosis, the deliberator, the decider, deciding aspect of our mind, that is calmed down. That is silenced, you could say. And then that person takes control of us. So now, at one level, anybody can hypnotize anyone. You could say even a very powerful public speech. That is at one level, one kind of hypnotization. There are some people who are great orators and they can whip up emotions in people. People might sometimes, of course, some orators can do act negatively also. People just come for a talk and then at the end of the talk, if that person is given a passionate talk, people may be frenzied. They may go on the riots. So what has happened? They are not thinking themselves. Their thinking has been taken over by someone else. So basically, when another person influences us, we use the word hypnotizing. Oh, the talk was hypnotizing. We get captivated by it. We get influenced by it. So that is in a generic sense. So we can say that hypnosis is that in a generic sense, where one person influences another, with the other person's critical faculty going off, and that person just subjecting oneself to the other person's control. That is hypnosis. And that can be generically called hypnosis. Specifically, when A works on B. And now, there is A who has a particular mind. By mind, I mean a subtle body. B has a subtle body. And there is an interface between the two. So there are some people are more hypnotizable than others. That means, some people, their critical awareness is very high. So, if their critical awareness is very high, then even if somebody else tries to hypnotize, it will not work. Or it will take a long time to work for them. Some people, their critical awareness is very low. So, if somebody tries to hypnotize them, they will be more easily hypnotized. Conversely, as some people's capacity to hypnotize is also more. That means they speak, they act, they talk, they think, they gesticulate. In a particular way, the other person gets captivated. So hypnosis basically means that one person takes over the control of the other person's mind. But how much that can be done, that will depend on both that person's particular. So by their own karma, some people may be more hypnotizable than others. That means there's a weakness within them, you could say. And by their own karma, some people may be capable of more hypnotizing than others, of hypnotizing others more. So that's how hypnosis works. So it's, we still have our free will, we still have our intelligence by which we can evaluate, but that intelligence is temporarily silenced. And we act according to the other person's desire. Okay? Yeah. Any other questions? Yes, please.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna Prabhu. You explained very well how can I design our mind. And you explained our mind just like my body is a hardware and my mind is software and my soul is a user. But understanding all of these we have, but sometimes we have our unwanted thoughts most of the times came in our mind, which are not like sometimes in front of deities, yeah, we are doing chanting, we do any particular of my work. But sometimes unwanted thoughts came in our mind and disturbed my mind. And I'm not interested in depth of my mind. And so how can I fight with them and how can I control and how can I design? So can I work, which I'm doing very properly and remove from that thoughts? Okay. So
and unwanted thoughts come in the mind. How can you focus? That's what we are going to elaborate and discuss in future classes. But I'll just briefly explain this, that there is information which comes into the mind. The most important step for dealing with the mind is distancing ourselves from the mind. That means we have to identify the mind. Hey, this is the mind speaking. Not identify with the mind. Identify with the mind means, oh, I'm feeling angry now. Oh, I want to show this person. So, but identifying the mind, hey, the mind is getting angry now. And the mind is prompting me to shout at this person. The mind is prompting me to hit out at this person. So once we identify the mind, then we can deal with it. So the first step in dealing with the mind, in dealing with unwanted thoughts is to recognize that everything inside me is not me. That, okay, these thoughts are coming and because of whatever past karma, whatever inclination, whatever samskara, whatever be the cause, it has come here. So, we identify that this is not me. And this is not what I want to do. Prakasham cha pravrittim cha moham eva cha pandava nadveshti sampravruttani na nivruttani kaangshati udasina vadasinam gunayona vichalyate gunavartantityeva yogatishtati lingate. In 14.22 and 23, Krishna says that by the three modes, different kinds of thoughts will come in us. He uses the word prakasha, pravritti and moha to refer to goodness, passion and ignorance. In goodness, illumination comes. In passion, the inclination to act comes. I don't do this, I don't do that, I don't do that. And moha, just tiredness, illusion comes in ignorance. This na dveshti sampravruttani na nivruttani kaangshati. When something comes, we don't resent its arrival. Nor when it goes away, we don't crave for its presence. Udasina vadasina. Stay as if detached. Gunair yo na vichalyate. By the modes, one does not get agitated. How? Guna vartante ityeva. That, knowing that it is the modes which are producing this, yo avatishtati neengate. One does not get agitated. So, how do we do this? I'll give one example here and elaborately. I'll talk later. Say, in cricket, there is an umpire. Now, Krishna says, udasina vadasina. Be situated as if detached. So, in English, there are actually two words, uninterested and disinterested. Sometimes they are used interchangeably, but actually they have two very different meanings. Uninterested means having no interest at all in the subject. Disinterested means having no vested interest. Disinterested means impartial. Uninterested means apathetic, uncaring. So, if a cricket match is going on, the umpire should be disinterested, not uninterested. Isn't it? So, the bowler bowls and the bowler appeals. And the umpire says, you know, I was not watching the match. That will not do. Then why are you the umpire? The umpire has to watch the match. Has to watch what is happening very carefully. But the umpire has to be disinterested. It shouldn't be that, oh, I want this team to win. I want that team to lose. No. The umpire has to be neutral. So the players will appeal. But the umpire simply doesn't. Umpire has to process the appeal and then decide. Now it is the duty of the players to, even if the batsman is not out, still the bowlers and fielders will appeal. Now just because the players have appealed does not mean the umpire has to give the batsman out. But just because the player has appealed, that does not mean that every appeal has to be rejected also. The appeal has to be evaluated on merit. So similarly for us, once we understand that I am different from the mind, then we have to become like the umpire. Various emotions, desires, thoughts, they will appeal within us. Do this, eat this, speak this, watch this. But we have to evaluate. So to the extent we situate ourselves on the spiritual platform, extent we with knowledge and with realization, with philosophical knowledge, when we study and hear regularly, we understand that I am not the mind. These thoughts coming within me are not mine. And then, with spiritual strength, evam buddhe param buddhva samsthidya atmanam atmana. In 3.43, the Bhagavad Krishna says, evam buddhe, with your intelligence, param buddhva, know that you are param, you are transcendental. You are beyond this material phenomena, beyond the mind. Samsthabhya atmanam atmana. Situate yourself on the spiritual platform. So then, we recognize that these are emotions, these are desires which are coming in, they are going to appeal. But I, by reminding myself that I am a soul, I evaluate. And then on merit, I either accept or I reject. So, rejection is not possible simply by saying no. We have to have some redirection. So when we don't want to do something, we have to have something else to do. So first is, at least I should not want to do what the mind is telling. But then I can't simply keep saying no to what the mind is saying. I have to have something positive to say yes to. And when I focus on saying yes to the positive, then the no will be automatically said over there. So first of all, distancing ourselves from the mind, and then redirecting our thoughts elsewhere. That's how we can learn to get rid of unwanted thoughts. Okay. So we will have more time tomorrow, and we'll continue the session. If you have some questions also, we can discuss it in tomorrow's class. Thank you very much. Shri Prabhupada ki, Granthra Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Gaur Premanandam.